What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Seeking Excellence. This is your host, Nathan Crankfield. And one of the things I've wanted to do for a long time now with Seeking Excellence is book club. A lot of people have asked about Emily and I's routine of being in book club. This is something we did while dating and then engaged. And we started at the beginning of our marriage and we've been pretty bad with it, especially the second half of 2023. And many of you know, if you follow us on social media, if you listen to the podcast, you've heard us talk about our kind of marriage book club before. And so we love it. We love reading books together. And I think it's a great way for a community to just explore a topic and to grow together spiritually and in a number of different ways, right? Because we didn't only read spiritual books as our book club. We read a lot of different things. We would basically have a draft and we would basically talk about different topics and think about reading like Dave Ramsey or what are the books, novels and relationship books. And then we do spiritual books and stuff, of course, as well. And so, yeah, it's been a huge blessing for us and we've always really enjoyed it. And now I wanted to do it as a community. And so I thought, like, what's a good book to go through? What are some of my favorite books of all time? And so after some brainstorming and some prayer, I decided to start with the Screwtape Letters. And so you've probably heard me talk about this ad nauseum, but all of the Seeking Excellence supporters on Locals got free copies of the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. And you know now that we are going through daily videos Monday through Friday for the next 5-6 weeks. And yeah, we're going through the book chapter by chapter together. And we're having some great conversations on Locals in the comments under each video and things like that. But it's been awesome for me. I'm hoping that it'll just be really impactful and really transform at least one person's life. I know it's been really impactful for me already. And so maybe I am that person. But I wanted to share kind of a sample of that. So maybe if you were thinking about joining us on Locals, you're thinking about what that might be like, I wanted to share a little sample episode. So we'll be doing some samples on Fridays for the next several weeks because recording those videos, you know, 5 videos a week plus 2 podcasts and trying to do a third one on the Friday episodes just wasn't going to happen. So these are going to be the Friday episodes for the time being. And if you want to see all of the videos and get all of the content, you know where to join us on Locals. And if not, then you can just enjoy the samples for now. But I think there's a lot of good content and helpful stuff and insight that comes out of these episodes, these videos that I've been recording. So I hope that this will bless your day as you go into the weekend and think about your spiritual life as we get ready to prepare for Advent and think about the ways that we need to prepare our hearts for the second coming of Christ. Hopefully this will be helpful in guiding you in that. So without further ado, let's get to it. Welcome to Seeking Excellence Book Club. I am your host, as always, Nathan Crankfield. And if you're joining us for this, that means that you're a Seeking Excellence Locals supporter. And that means you're one of my top, I don't know how many supporters we have right now, 30 favorite people in the world. So congratulations for being on that list. It is great to be with you today. You'll see that my background's a little bit different. I'm currently at my grandparents' house. We're visiting here in central Pennsylvania. So that's why I don't think you can see any, but if you zoomed out, if I zoomed out a little bit, you would see VHS tapes here to my left, a surefire sign that you're at a grandparent's house. And there's just a lot of fun decor. And I have this very old table that probably cranks and squeaks every time I touch it. And not the most comfortable chair I've ever sat in my life. But alas, the other thing you can't see is I have puzzles that are propping up my microphone because my traveling microphone stand is not nearly as tall, which is a tragedy. But all that being said, it's great to be with you. Thank you for being a Seeking Excellence supporter. And yeah, I'm so grateful to be able to do this with you and to dive deep into one of my favorite books of all time, which is The Screwtape Letters. So if you are a supporter, you should have gotten your own free copy of this in a package from us with some other fun stuff, stickers. If you're, you know, if you give $20 or above, you should have gotten a or 25 and above, you should have gotten a mug as well. And so we're sending t-shirts out to those who are $50 and above. So really grateful for your support. It helps us to do a lot. It's a part of the reason why I have this great setup that I can take on the road to have lighting and a good quality camera, great microphones and all of that, my new headphones. And so it also helps to pay the people who edit these things and make it look cute. Like, and then I have my wife volunteer, who is my director today. She is a huge support, obviously. She does a lot for me, packs my lunch, bears my children, amongst other things. And so she's very talented, lots of skills. And she also packed the packages for you guys and made them look nice, because I was just going to mail you the book. And then she was like, no, we should make it look cute. And I was like, you're right. Our supporters deserve the cuteness. And so we brought in the cutest woman in the world, and she made things look nice. But C.S. Lewis, Clive Staples Lewis, one of the greatest Christian authors of all time, in my humble opinion. And Clive Staples Lewis is from the UK, which I have mixed feelings about. I think there's some strong things that come from the UK and some not so great things. But he is from Great Britain, from England, and he wrote this book right around World War II. And so I believe it was published in 1942, which on, European timeline, that's 3 years into World War II. He's, lived through World War I as well. And so you'll see, if you get ahead, if you've already read the book, that he gets into some like wartime ideas and things like that. But the whole concept behind it, if you haven't read it yet, if you're behind, today we're going to be going through chapter one. We're going to be doing these videos one chapter at a time, aiming for about 10 minutes per video. To be fair, I didn't start a timer, and I can't see the screen to know how far along we are. So we're just guessing at this for this one, just kind of freestyling it. My wife gave me a thumbs up saying that she's tracking. She's got a timer going. Wow, she's a great director. You deserve a raise. I know she'll agree with that. But Screwtape Letters, the whole concept is you have a senior tempter who is Wormwood writing, or no, is who is Screwtape, the senior tempter, who's writing to his nephew, Wormwood. And there's many other demons with weird names like that that are referred to throughout the book. But the idea is he's basically mentoring him on his new patient. They refer to the patient, and some of these terms are really tricky, right? So the patient is the man to whom the demon is assigned. So it's kind of making this assumption that, similarly to how Catholic theology teaches that we have a guardian angel assigned to each of us at birth, or I guess at conception, technically, when our life begins at conception, we have a guardian angel that's assigned to us for life. And so that's kind of the positive. He's kind of our protector, and not just a protector. I think a lot of times we think of a guardian angel just protecting us from car accidents, right? Or other dangerous things, but they're more of a spiritual protector. And so we can pray to them for spiritual protection. And on behalf of our children, we can ask for their guardian angel's protection. But this basically takes the assumption that we also have an evil spirit assigned to us at birth. And so these evil spirits are kind of assigned to us, and that's the whole concept. This patient is who Wormwood is assigned to, and he's supposed to, guide this man away from his faith, away from God, to their father below, which is the devil, right? Which is Satan. The enemy, when you see the capital E, enemy, is God, right? And so they talk about God as the enemy. So he really went into this, from my understanding, from what I've learned about it, into a very dark place to write this. As you can imagine, getting in the mind of a demon or a tempter or the devil himself is not a fun place to be. It's very dark. It's very insidious, right? And so he made a great sacrifice to really go into that place of mind. And it's my understanding that he released these as weekly kind of like journal entries or articles and things like that. So they were coming out 1 week at a time. And then they compiled them into the book. So there's 31 chapters. And then at the end, you have Screwtape Proposes a Toast. I've read that before. I'm not as crazy about it. Not that I think it's bad, but I just don't think it's as engaging or as insightful. And so I don't think we're going to be doing anything for that. So feel free to read that on your own at the end. But as I said in the email, if you've seen about this, my encouragement for you is to read one chapter a day. And then Monday through Friday, I'll be releasing a video each day going through it. And so thinking about our goal here with Book Club is for me to take some of the insights from this and apply it to our everyday lives and think about how to make it more practically applicable to our modern day world. Because this is something that is very timeless in many ways. There's a lot of similarities you're going to see here in the approaches and the experiences that these people, or the demons are trying to coerce him into having, or the way they're guiding his mind and his formation, or trying to derail it, if you will. And I just want to take in and try to think about other ways that this applies, right? Because we are not this patient. We are ourselves, and we're living in our own time and place and have our own situations. But we'll see a lot of similar themes into how the devil works in our lives. And we remember that we have three primary enemies, and you'll see how the three start to work together in this book. So the three primary enemies of humanity, of goodness, are the devil, the world, and the flesh. And so you'll hear him talking about temptations of lust and sex and things like that. We'll also hear him talking about coordinating with other things that are happening in the world and specific other demons and tempters to try to work together to derail, you know, a mother and son or a group of friends and things like that. And so I just want to start with a line that I love from the preface. So throughout this, I'm going to be reading certain portions of it, certain parts that really stand out to me. And then I'll also be just kind of giving some, yeah, reflections and thoughts. So in the preface, the second paragraph, I really love this. C.S. Lewis writes, "There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to believe in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive, or excuse me, one is to disbelieve in their existence, so to not believe in them. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased by both errors and hail a materialist or a magician with the same delight." I love that because I think it shows, you know, I'm always very grateful for the Aristotelian approach to virtues and understanding that the virtue often lies in the mean. Sometimes we can misunderstand that quote to think that virtue lying in the mean should, you know, make us more lukewarm towards the virtues, right? As though like virtue lies in moderation, which is not necessarily what it means for it to lie in the mean. Virtue lying in the mean means that there's vices on both sides, and you can be an extreme in either way, right? Courage is kind of the typical one where you think of being extremely rash, somebody who's just always taking chances and putting their life at risk unnecessarily. You can do this in business, right? Where you're just constantly taking risk and you ruin, or financially in general, right? Where you're just always betting and gambling and trying to win the lottery, right? If you took out $10,000 from my 401k and put it all in the lottery, something like that would be rash. And then on the other side, you have cowardice, people who are not willing to take any risk, who are just penny pinching and holding on to all of their savings, not willing to do anything. That applies to a lot of life, but courage kind of lies in the middle where you take calculated risks and you have some fear that you overcome, but you're also not being ridiculous and reckless with what you have. And so this, I think, is a good example of that, where the virtue lies in the mean, where on one extreme, you have people who are obsessed with what the great artist and comedian Theo Von would call the dark arts. You know, you have people who are just dabbing a little too far into dark arts, people who he refers to as a magician there, where you have people, you know, we just passed Halloween. So, you know, there's people out here trying to summon the dead and doing all kinds of crazy, reckless, stupid stuff like that. And this happens all over the place, right? Many different cultures have their own forms of this. And it gets really not good really fast. I mean, you can talk about, if you want to do some research into this, these are some hot takes, I think, sometimes in the Catholic world. But even things like Enneagram, obviously, I think most of us agree on things like horoscopes, going to see psychics, going to get your palm read, stupid shit like this that people do to try to figure out, you know, their future is dabbling in the dark arts, as they say. And so that is where people are kind of have this obsession with trying to get in contact with the dead, playing with Ouija boards and things like that. And he's like, the devils rejoice in this. The other thing the devils rejoice in, which is often referred to as the devil's greatest trick, is convincing us that he doesn't exist. And so we obviously have the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden, and the serpent comes up to them. And so they obviously believed in him and were still tempted and fell. But a lot of people today just don't believe in God or the devil. And if you don't believe in the devil, then you're not in any way privy to his schemes. If you don't believe in any of this, then when you read this and you see how the devil's actually working to pull you away from God, if you don't believe in God or the devil, then you think all of this is just nonsense. All of this is just fiction. In which case, the devils are very pleased, because as we'll learn in this book, I think it's even in chapter one, if I'm not mistaken, the devils prefer a nice, easy route to hell, as opposed to, they're not out to create Hitlers, right? A lot of times we think that that's what the devil rejoices in people like Hitler and death and evil that reigns, you know, in full countries and for many years. But at the same time, they'd rather just kind of coerce people just kind of casually and gradually into their father below, into his hands, as they say. So turning to chapter one, again, this is going to be a little bit longer because it's an intro episode. So Emily, how am I doing on time? I'm like 8 minutes in, she says. Thanks be to God. So that's not too bad. All right. So chapter one, this I think is such a good start, right? He's talking about how Wormwood is starting to be naive. And I want to read this quote from the first paragraph there. He says, it sounds as if you suppose that argument was the way to keep him out of the enemy's clutches. That might have been so if he had lived a few centuries earlier. At the time, the humans still knew pretty well when a thing was proved and when it was not. And if it was proved, they really believed it. They still connected thinking with doing and were prepared to alter their way of life as a result of a chain of reasoning. Now, this reminds me a little bit of I was just listening to, you know, Jordan Peterson was just pressed a little bit on his belief in God by Piers Morgan, and I was just watching a different interview with him. And his answer is very interesting. This answer specifically that I heard with this interview with this woman made me think that he was just kind of really taking the weight of his words and his decision very seriously. And he often, when asked about his belief in God, will say, "By their fruits you will know them." And he says that I don't think a lot of people believe what they say they believe. He kind of is pointing at the hypocrisy of a lot of Christians. He says not a lot of people believe what they say they believe. I think you believe what you act. And this, I think, is really, really important. And I think a lot of Christians have lost this. And we can overdo it with thinking that non-Christians point out the hypocrisy of Christians too much. Because it is true that they point it out. And it's like, yeah, we have a perfect standard and none of us can reach that. So we shouldn't be too swayed by the hypocrisy of Christians. But at the same time, I think we can all also agree that too often we don't let what we believe affect how we live. And there can be a great barrier to wanting to do that. I think this is one of the big draws of evangelicalism, of non-denominational church, is because they say, well, all you have to do, like, we've reduced, this kind of comes from this line that we've reduced Christianity to an idea, right? And so it's like, I profess my belief in something, and as long as I say I believe it, or I think that I believe in God, I'm good. I don't need to go to church. I can live stream church if I feel like it, if it's convenient. Living with my boyfriend or living with my girlfriend, sleeping with them before marriage, delaying marriage, not letting God have any say in how many children we have or when we have kids, you know, doing what I want that is most self-fulfilling in my career and all these things, is we don't allow our faith to impact our actions. And so he's talking about how there was this kind of glorious era, if you will. I think this is when Christendom really reigned, when people were convinced by argument. And when people were convinced that something was true, you see this with some people still today. I mean, I just recorded with Jason Craig, that podcast is coming out here soon. And he talks about how he had to call his girlfriend at the time, who later became his wife and converted with him. And he had read this book trying to disprove Catholicism and was convinced that Catholicism was true. And he says, I have to become Catholic. And he changed his way of life. He changed his way of living. Now, he was already Christian, so it wasn't a huge jump for him, but he did start to, you know, abide by church teaching, which is certainly a little bit more, at least different than his Protestant tradition that he was living by before that. But now he says that, and I think this is still so real today, it's pretty amazing how some 80, you know, plus years later, this still rings so true. He says, your man has been accustomed ever since he was a boy to have a dozen incompatible philosophies dancing about together inside his head. He doesn't think of doctrines as primarily true or false, but as academic or practical, outworn or contemporary, conventional or ruthless. Jargon, and not argument, is your best ally in keeping him from the church. So basically, it's this idea of really, really shallow thinking. And he goes on to talk about how the trouble about argument is that it moves the whole struggle onto the enemy's own ground. He can argue too. By the very act of arguing, you awake the patient's reason. And once it is awake, who can foresee the result? Man, if this doesn't reinforce everything we talk about often as Catholics, I usually tell people, this applies to me both for politics and religion, that if you're truly seeking the truth, if you are genuinely and sincerely seeking the truth, you're going to end up a conservative Catholic. That is my strong opinion and belief, because I think that they're the only two sides of things that make sense. Now, you can get into what it really means to be conservative, and there's a lot to that. There's a lot to unpack. But I think that the reasonable person ends up in those two camps. This is why you have so many converts. We often say that poorly formed Catholics end up becoming Protestants, and well-formed, well-read Protestants end up becoming Catholics. There's a reason for that, right? You don't see a lot of people who, And not that it never happens, but you don't see a lot of people who really start to take in the breadth of history, that really start to take in all of church history, all of political history, and end up as liberal, you know, non-believers, right? It's usually people who are persuaded by very contemporary ideas, new things, these ideas of jargon, right? Healthcare is a human right. Abortion is healthcare. Trans people exist, and like random shit like that, it doesn't even make sense. It doesn't even mean anything, but it allows people just to kind of feel like they're a part of something, right? Free Palestine. What does that even mean? Most people can't tell you, but they just say it, right? Because we just, there's these slogans, Black Lives Matter, and they're loaded with so many kind of hidden things and a lot of hate and negativity and evil, frankly. And we don't know what they mean. So people just kind of embrace them and they put them on their bumper stickers. When you open up reason, you're on enemy's territory. And that's right. Why? Because we're made in the image and likeness of God. And what does that mean? It means that we have the ability to reason. We have the ability to choose. We have the ability to be rational. We are rational animals with rational souls. And so that means that we're able to think. We're able to actually decide things. We're able to conceptualize, right? Animals, your dog can't conceptualize justice. Your dog can't conceptualize what mercy is, right? They can just act on their instincts. Obviously, Luna is very profound, but she still, you know, struggles with justice, which is kind of a difficult concept if you really think about it. Anyways, here, so the last thing I think, so shallow thinking is what we want, right? So you see this a lot of times with so many people where you have this really, really shallow thinking, never going that deep in anything. Or how many times have you heard, if you're a Catholic, especially talking to Protestants, about the church, but just in general, even people with political, of saying, oh, all that stuff is just too complex. All the economic stuff is too complex. Oh, all this faith stuff, like theology, is just too complex for me. So I can't think about it. I can't talk about it. They just kind of like limit themselves to saying, like, I can only really say surface level. And so I just, you know, devour the jargon and live my life based on that. Then you have here at the bottom, the last bit in this chapter that I really love is this idea of confusion and distraction, right? This idea that the devil is only there, you know, the tempter is only there to kind of make things cloudy and blurry. And so he says, do remember you are there to fuddle him. From the way some of your young friends talk, anyone would suppose it was your job to teach. So a lot of times, and this is where you get into this concept of the devil owns the fence, right? Because you see people that are kind of just stay in the middle, you know, everything I was just talking about of how we like to say, oh, I can't understand that, or that's too complex for me, or this is just too much, you know, for my head, or it's not good to talk about politics or religion. We shouldn't go into ideas or topics like that. We should never discuss it. And we just stay kind of shallow and we kind of stay on this fence. And the devil likes to keep us in this fence. Well, I don't want to go too extreme in this way. I don't want to be a Jesus freak. I don't want to be too, you know, too much of this or be thought of that. And so I'm just going to kind of stay in this like fuddled in between. And I even think about this with a lot of people who are independents, right? Politically speaking, is like they don't always wear this as a badge of honor. Like there's some badass out there, you know, a one man army. And it's like you probably just haven't really thought through things enough. And it's one thing to say there's something on Democrats I agree with, some things on Republicans I agree with. I don't like to even identify myself as a Republican, so the Republican Party drives me insane. But that being said, I know that I'm conservative. I know that I'm largely on the right, you know, when it comes to politics and just these basic ideas about freedom and justice and how to create a good and free society that can thrive and that has the least amount of poor people, that, you know, treats people well, that has freedom of religion, that has people who can defend themselves, that has freedom of speech. Like all of those are conservative ideas. And so I don't see any value of being independent. I don't know. How are you independent? How do you sometimes agree with free speech, but not other times? Then you're not somebody who's for free speech. How, you're either for freedom or against it. And so you're either on the left or the right. This idea that I could be sometimes on both, that just means you don't stand by principles. You just, you know, are kind of convinced by the signs of the times or whatever. These are the people I think that often change a lot, not over time. And it's good to change. It's good to question your opinions and your stances on things. I've changed my opinions a lot over the years, but it still lived by certain principles. For me, it was actually holding up issues against my principles that I had found to be true and good and beautiful. And when I did that, I was like, oh, I'm actually on this side. But it was coming to understand those principles and those values beforehand and then grading everything by it. And so let's keep that in mind. When you have these kind of concepts or you see it, I think the Screwtape Letters can often show you how the tempters and devils are working in other people's lives too. And I want to warn us against becoming judgmental towards other people. We want to encourage people and be the voice for good against that, right? So when we are in conversation, you start to see people's reasonings and thinking and their words start to mimic some of this stuff. We want to pray to the Holy Spirit, invite him into the conversation, which we should always do, and then ask him, what do you want me to say? What is the best route to go here? And be the other side, in a sense. And so when we do that, that's when we'll have our best chance at success. And so this wraps up chapter one. I know this was a little bit long. Again, this is an intro day, but great to be with you. Thanks so much for your time. I hope this book continues to bless you. We'll see you tomorrow for episode number two.